Book 13th. Conclusion. In one of these excursions, travelling then through Wales on foot and with a youthful friend, I left Beth Gellert's huts at couching time and westward took my way to see the sun rise from the top of Snowdon. Having reached the cottage at the mountain's foot, we there roused up the shepherd who by ancient rite of office is the stranger's usual guide, and after short refreshment sallied forth. It was a summer's night, a close, warm night, one dull and glaring, with a dripping mist low hung and thick that covered all the sky, half threatening storm and rain. But on we went unchecked, being full of heart and having faith in our tried pilot. Little could we see, hemmed round on every side with fog and damp, and, after ordinary travellers' chat with our conductor, silently we sank each into commerce with his private thoughts. Thus did we breast the ascent, and by myself was nothing either seen or heard the while which took me from my musings, save that once the shepherd's cur did, to his own great joy, unearth a hedgehog in the mountain crags, round which he made a barking turbulent. This small adventure, for even such it seemed in that wild place and at the dead of night, being over and forgotten, on we wound in silence as before. With forehead bent earthward, as if in opposition set against an enemy, I panted up with eager pace and no less eager thoughts. Thus might we wear perhaps an hour away, ascending at loose distance each from each, and I, as chanced, the foremost of the band, when at my feet the ground appeared to brighten, and with a step or two seemed brighter still. Nor had I time to ask the cause of this, for instantly a light upon the turf fell like a flash. I looked about, and lo, the moon stood naked in the heavens at height immense above my head. And on the shore I found myself of a huge sea of mist, which meek and silent rested at my feet. 100 hills their dusky backs upheaved all over this still ocean, and beyond, far, far beyond, the vapours shot themselves in headlands, tongues, and promontory shapes into the sea, the real sea, that seemed to dwindle and give up its majesty, usurped upon as far as sight could reach. Meanwhile, the moon looked down upon this show in single glory, and we stood, the mist touching our very feet. And from the shore, at distance not the third part of a mile, was a blue chasm, a fracture in the vapour, a deep and gloomy breathing place through which mounted the roar of waters, torrents, streams innumerable, roaring with one voice. The universal spectacle throughout was shaped for admiration and delight, grand in itself alone. But in that breach through which the homeless voice of waters rose, that dark, deep thoroughfare, had nature lodged the soul, the imagination of the whole. A meditation rose in me that night, upon the lonely mountain, when the scene had passed away. And it appeared to me the perfect image of a mighty mind, of one that feeds upon infinity, that is exalted by an underpresence, the sense of God, or whatsoe'er is dim or vast in its own being. Above all, one function of such mind had nature there exhibited, by putting forth, and that with circumstance most awful and sublime, that domination which she oftentimes exerts upon the outward face of things, so moulds them and endues, abstracts, combines, or by abrupt and unhabitual influence does make one object so impress itself upon all others and pervade them so that even the grossest minds must see and hear and cannot choose but feel. The power which these acknowledge when thus moved, which nature thus thrusts forth upon the senses, is the express resemblance, in the fullness of its strength made visible, a genuine counterpart and brother of the glorious faculty which higher minds bear with them as their own. This is the very spirit in which they deal with all the objects of the universe. They from their native selves can send abroad like transformation, for themselves create a like existence, and, whene'er it is created for them, catch it by an instinct. Them the enduring and the transient both serve to exalt. They build up greatest things from least suggestions, ever on the watch, willing to work and to be wrought upon. They need not extraordinary calls to rouse them. In a world of life they live, by sensible impressions not enthralled, but quickened, roused, and made thereby more fit to hold communion with the invisible world. Such minds are truly from the deity, for they are powers, and hence the highest bliss that can be known is theirs, the consciousness of whom they are habitually infused through every image and through every thought and all impressions. Hence religion, faith, and endless occupation for the soul, whether discursive or intuitive. Hence sovereignty within and peace at will, emotion which best foresight need not fear, most worthy then of trust when most intense. Hence cheerfulness in every act of life. Hence truth in moral judgments and delight that fails not in the external universe. Oh, who is he that has his whole life long preserved, enlarged this freedom in himself? For this alone is genuine liberty. Witness, ye solitudes, where I received my earliest visitations, careless then of what was given me, and where now I roam, a meditative, oft a suffering man, and yet I trust with undiminished powers. Witness, whatever falls my better mind, revolving with the accidents of life may have sustained, that howsoe'er misled, I never, in the quest of right and wrong, did tamper with myself from private aims, nor was in any of my hopes the dupe of selfish passions, nor did wilfully yield ever to mean cares and low pursuits, but rather did with jealousy shrink back from every combination that might aid the tendency, too potent in itself, of habit to enslave the mind. I mean, oppress it by the laws of vulgar sense, and substitute a universe of death, the falsest of all worlds, in place of that which is divine and true. To fear and love, to love as first and chief, for their fear ends, be this ascribed. To early intercourse in presence of sublime and lovely forms with the adverse principles of pain and joy, evil as one is rashly named by those who do not know what they say, from love, for here do we begin and end, all grandeur comes, all truth and beauty, from pervading love, that gone, we are as dust. Behold the fields in balmy springtime full of rising flowers and happy creatures. See that pair, the lamb and the lamb's mother, and their tender ways shall touch thee to the heart. In some green bower rest, and be not alone, but have thou there the one who is thy choice of all the world. There linger, lulled and lost and rapt away, be happy to thy fill. Thou callest this love, and so it is. But there is higher love than this, a love that comes into the heart with awe and a diffusive sentiment. Thy love is human merely. This proceeds more from the brooding soul and is divine. This love, more intellectual, cannot be without imagination, which in truth is but another name for absolute strength and clearest insight, amplitude of mind and reason in her most exalted mood. This faculty has been the moving soul of our long labour. We have traced the stream from darkness and the very place of birth in its blind cavern, whence is faintly heard the sound of waters. Followed it to light and open day, accompanied its course among the ways of nature, afterwards lost sight of it, bewildered and engulfed, then given it greeting as it rose once more with strength, reflecting in its solemn breast the works of man and face of human life. And lastly, from its progress have we drawn the feeling of life endless, the great thought by which we live, infinity and God. Imagination, having been our theme, so also has that intellectual love, for they are each in each and cannot stand individually. Here must thou be, O man, strength to thyself, no helper hast thou here, here keepest thou thy individual state. No other can divide with thee this work, no secondary hand can intervene to fashion this ability. 'Tis thine. The prime and vital principle is thine in the recesses of thy nature, far from any reach of outward fellowship, else 'tis not thine at all. But joy to him, O joy to him who here has sown, has laid here the foundations of his future years, for all that friendship, all that love can do, all that a darling countenance can look or dear voice utter to complete the man, perfect him, made imperfect in himself, all shall be his. And he whose soul has risen up to the height of feeling intellect shall want no humbler tenderness, his heart be tender as a nursing mother's heart. Of female softness shall his life be full, of little loves and delicate desires, mild interests and gentlest sympathies. Child of my parents, sister of my soul, elsewhere have strains of gratitude been breathed to thee for all the early tenderness which I from thee imbibed. And true it is that later seasons owed to thee no less, for, spite of thy sweet influence, and the touch of other kindred hands that opened out the springs of tender thought in infancy, and spite of all which singly I had watched of elegance and each minuter charm in nature and in life still to the last, even to the very going out of youth, the period which our story now has reached, I too exclusively esteemed that love and sought that beauty which, as Milton sings, has terror in it. Thou didst soften down this over-sternness. But for thee, sweet friend, my soul, too reckless of a mild grace, had been far longer what by nature it was framed, longer retained its countenance severe, a rock with torrents roaring, with the clouds familiar and a favourite of the stars. But thou didst plant its crevices with flowers, hang it with shrubs that twinkle in the breeze, and teach the little birds to build their nests and warble in its chambers. At a time when nature, destined to remain so long foremost in my affections, had fallen back into a second place, well pleased to be a handmaid to a nobler than herself, when every day brought with it some new sense of exquisite regard for common things, and all the earth was budding with these gifts of more refined humanity, thy breath, dear sister, was a kind of gentler spring that went before my steps. With such a theme, Coleridge, with this my argument of thee, shall I be silent? O most loving soul, placed on this earth to love and understand, and from thy presence shed the light of love, shall I be mute ere thou be spoken of? Thy gentle spirit to my heart of hearts did also find its way, and thus the life of all things, and the mighty unity in all which we behold and feel and are, admitted more habitually a mild interposition, closelier gathering thoughts of man and his concerns, such as become a human creature, be he who he may, poet or destined to an humbler name. And so, the deep enthusiastic joy, the rapture of the hallelujah sent from all that breathes and is, was chastened, stemmed and balanced by a reason which indeed is reason, duty and pathetic truth, and God and man divided, as they ought, between them the great system of the world where man is sphered and which God animates. And now, O friend, this history is brought to its appointed close. The discipline and consummation of the poet's mind in everything that stood most prominent have faithfully been pictured. We have reached the time which was our object from the first, when we may, not presumptuously, I hope, suppose my powers so far confirmed, and such my knowledge, as to make me capable of building up a work that should endure. Yet much has been omitted, as need was, of books, how much, and even of the other wealth which is collected among woods and fields, far more. For nature's secondary grace, that outward illustration which is hers, has hitherto been barely touched upon. The charm more superficial and yet sweet, which from her works finds way, contemplated as they hold forth a genuine counterpart and softening mirror of the moral world. Yes, having tracked the main essential power, imagination, up her way sublime, in turn might fancy also be pursued through all her transmigrations, till she too was purified, had learned to ply her craft by judgment steadied. Then might we return, and in the rivers and the groves behold another face, might hear them from all sides calling upon the more instructed mind to link their images, with subtle skill sometimes and by elaborate research, with forms and definite appearances of human life, presenting them sometimes to the involuntary sympathy of our internal being, satisfied and soothed with a conception of delight where meditation cannot come, which thought could never heighten. Above all, how much still nearer to ourselves we overlook in human nature and that marvellous world as studied first in my own heart, and then in life among the passions of mankind and qualities commixed and modified by the infinite varieties and shades of individual character. Herein it was for me this justice, bids me say, no useless preparation to have been the pupil of a public school, and forced in hardy independence to stand up among conflicting passions and the shock of various tempers, to endure and note what was not understood, though known to be. Among the mysteries of love and hate, honour and shame, looking to right and left, unchecked by innocence too delicate and moral notions too intolerant, sympathies too contracted. Hence, when called to take a station among men, the step was easier, the transition more secure, more profitable also. For the mind learns from such timely exercise to keep in wholesome separation the two natures, the one that feels, the other that observes. Let one word more of personal circumstance, not needless as it seems, be added here. Since I withdrew unwillingly from France, the story has demanded less regard to time and place, and where I lived and how has been no longer scrupulously marked. 3 years until a permanent abode received me with that sister of my heart, who ought by rights the dearest to have been conspicuous through this biographic verse, star seldom utterly concealed from view, I led an undomestic wanderer's life. In London chiefly was my home, and thence excursively, as personal friendships, chance or inclination led, or slender means gave leave, I roamed about from place to place, tarrying in pleasant nooks wherever found, through England or through Wales. A youth, he bore the name of Calvert, it shall live if words of mine can give it life, without respect to prejudice or custom, having hope that I had some endowments by which good might be promoted, in his last decay from his own family, withdrawing part of no redundant patrimony, did by a bequest sufficient for my needs enable me to pause for choice and walk at large and unrestrained, nor damped too soon by mortal cares. Himself no poet, yet far less a common spirit of the world, he deemed that my pursuits and labours lay apart from all that leads to wealth, or even, perhaps, to necessary maintenance without some hazard to the finer sense. He cleared a passage for me, and the stream flowed in the bent of nature. Having now told what best merits mention, further pains our present labour seems not to require, and I have other tasks. Call back to mind the mood in which this poem was begun, O friend. The termination of my course is nearer now, much nearer. Yet even then, in that distraction and intense desire, I said unto the life which I had lived, Where art thou? Hear I not a voice from thee which 'tis reproach to hear? Anon I rose, as if on wings, and saw beneath me stretched vast prospect of the world which I had been and was. And hence this song, which like a lark I have protracted in the unwearied heavens, singing, and often with more plaintive voice attempered to the sorrows of the earth, yet centering all in love, and in the end all gratulant, if rightly understood. Whether to me shall be allotted life, and with life power to accomplish aught of worth, sufficient to excuse me in men's sight for having given this record of myself, is all uncertain. But, beloved friend, when looking back thou seest, in clearer view than any sweetest sight of yesterday, that summer, when on Quantock's grassy hills far-ranging, and among the sylvan combes thou in the delicious words and with happy heart did speak the vision of that ancient man, the bright-eyed mariner, and rueful woes didst utter of the lady Christabel. And I, associate with such labour, walked murmuring of him who, joyous hap, was found, after the perils of his moonlight ride, near the loud waterfall, or her who sat in misery near the miserable thorn. When thou dost to that summer turn thy thoughts, and hast before thee all which we then were, to thee, in memory of that happiness, it will be known, by thee at least, my friend, felt, that the history of a poet's mind is labour not unworthy of regard. To thee the work shall justify itself. The last and later portions of this gift, which I for thee design, have been prepared in times which have from those wherein we first together wanted in Walposy differed thus far, that they have been, my friend, times of much sorrow, of a private grief keen and enduring, which the frame of mind that in this meditative history has been described more deeply makes me feel, yet likewise has enabled me to bear more firmly, and a comfort now, a hope, one of the dearest which this life can give, is mine. That thou art near, and wilt be soon restored to us in renovated health, when, after the first minglings of our tears, among other consolations we may find some pleasure from this offering of my love. Oh, yet a few short years of useful life, and all will be complete. Thy race be run, thy monument of glory will be raised. Then, though too weak to tread the ways of truth, this age fall back to old idolatry. Though men return to servitude as fast as the tide ebbs, to ignominy and shame by nations sink together, we shall still find solace in the knowledge which we have, blessed with true happiness, if we may be united helpers forward of a day of firmer trust, joint labourers in a work, should Providence such grace to us vouchsafe, of their redemption surely yet to come. Prophets of nature, we to them will speak a lasting inspiration, sanctified by reason and by truth. What we have loved, others will love, and we may teach them how. Instruct them how the mind of man becomes a thousand times more beautiful than the earth on which he dwells, above this frame of things, which mid all revolutions in the hopes and fears of men does still remain unchanged, in beauty exalted, as it is itself of substance and of fabric more divine.